Thank you for tuning into the Starkey Multifamily Podcast. Welcome to part two with Brandy Shotwell. And we're going to break apart because I think it deserves its own topic, its own segment. And we're going to talk about the current situation with the COVID-19 and how it has affected lending for multifamily. So Brandy, welcome back.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, if you could, let's talk about what does the landscape of multifamily lending look like today?
Yeah, so much has changed, Reed, over the course of the last 2 months with COVID-19. You have a lot of lenders that are just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. So they're being very apprehensive. Right now, Fannie and Freddie, it's just important for me to say this, but Fannie, Freddie, HUD, those are programs that are mandated to fund during times like this. So I get the question, oh, is Fannie going to stop lending or Freddie going to stop lending? Absolutely not. They are there to put liquidity into the market during times like this to keep things going. Now, they do change their programs, of course, and their guidelines for underwriting. And I think this is just the biggest thing to kind of guide people and help people with underwriting. There are a lot of bridge lenders that have hit the pause button altogether. CMBS lenders, they've paused. Life co companies, they've paused. Bridge lenders have paused, a lot of them, the majority of them. And the reason is it's just too much uncertainty right now. They need to know where things are heading. The value of the portfolios that they securitize after closing, the pricing is all over the place. They just don't know how to price it. So right now, a lot of things are stagnant and just waiting. And let's see, today is May 14th. They are really kind of seeing where things will fall by June 1st. You know, rent collections has been a big issue. Like, okay, you know, where will rent collections fall? Well, now April came in strong, and to date, May has performed as well. So we hope that we can hit those same numbers and that things will continue to get better as different states open back up, as people get their stimulus, as, you know, people go back to work. And they get unemployment if they can't go back to work. So we'll see how things shake out. But right now, one thing I just want to help investors with is how to underwrite, because so many investors are going after properties right now. This is a good time to buy. If a property is listed, you may be able to really strike a good deal on a property right now. So how do I underwrite that property? Because it looks different. And one of the biggest changes across the board has been the interest reserve, where now Fannie and Freddie, bridge lenders that are still funding, they want to see that they want to actually collect an interest reserve that they put to the side, that they escrow, that they, you know, put up, and that is used for if collections drop and you're unable to collect on the property and you can't cover your debt, your mortgage payment, well, then that money can be taken from the interest reserve. So right now with Freddie, if you are underwriting a property, you're going to need to account for 12 months interest reserve across the board. With Fannie, if that loan is less than $6 million, they want to see 18 months of interest reserve. If it's above $6 million, then they want to see 12 months interest reserve. You know, strangely enough, the rates are amazing right now. Rates are pricing in the threes, you know, mid to high threes. The rates are just phenomenal right now. The other thing that the lenders are doing that's different is the replacement reserve, where before we were not required to escrow the replacement reserve. You just needed to have that $250, $300 per door. But now they want that money escrowed. So the difference between the two, the interest reserve is not part of the loan. It is considered part of the down payment. So if you are syndicating a deal, you need to make sure that you raise 12 to 18 months of interest reserve to put down with the lender. Now, those funds will be released back to the sponsor as long as the property performs. With Fannie, they want to see that property perform for a year at a 1.25 debt service coverage. With Freddie, it's 90 days after the emergency has been lifted off of the country. So there are people that are going into Freddie loans today, and because the property is cash flowing already, they're able to request a release of the interest reserve as soon as they close. So, you know, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. But I think from an underwriting perspective, you need to figure out how you're going to plug that into your underwriting, because that's money that you'll raise, but then you'll get back, you know, hopefully if the property performs properly. So that those are the two biggest things. The replacement reserve, you know, the engineer is the one who determines, you know, the when we get the property condition report, what the replacement reserve per door should be. But I'm telling my investors, use $250 to $300 per door, and it will be escrowed just like insurance and taxes. And that is not released back, you know, just like the interest reserve is. So those are additional monies that you have to put down, that you have to reserve for. So it may change your underwriting. It's definitely going to change your underwriting, but it may change your returns, and maybe you need to make a better deal with the seller, maybe try to get the property for less, or, you know, just negotiate. You also want to make sure during this time that you have enough time in that contract. You know, prior to COVID, we had hard money day one. You remember that, Reed? But no more hard money day one, because it's too much uncertainty in the market. So you want to make sure that you also have enough time in the contract. You have appraisers that may not be able to go out, you know, to do the inspections on the properties, the engineers that may not be able to go out and do the inspection. You have tenants that may be, you know, affected by COVID, and they won't allow you into their units, you know, to do the inspection that you need to do, because you want to see all those units. So there we can definitely say there will be delays, right? We have county offices that are closed, you know, where mortgages can't be recorded. You have title companies that are closed. So there are definitely going to be delays. So you want to make sure that you have enough time in your contract, enough extensions built in, and no hard money involved in that contract, because it can put you in a bad position, especially if things change. So those are just some tips I wanted to share with everyone, so that, you know, they can tighten up their underwriting and what they're doing during this time, and make sure that their contracts, make sure you have a good SEC attorney on your team, that he can structure that contract accordingly, so that you're not left, you know, paying a $50,000, losing money, you know, losing a $50,000, $100,000 earnest deposit on a property.
Let me ask about those repair reserves. So they're held in an escrow now. So the whole purpose of having those is so that if you have a major expense, that you've got money to cover that, and you can put money back into that repair reserve. But if they're holding it, how do you get it out? I mean, is that something that you can access?
Yes, that is something you can access. And it's just like accessing a draw. You'll have an asset manager assigned to you, and they will be able to help you throughout that process.
But you have to have the money up front anyway.
But you have to have it. But it hasn't been escrowed before. It's not included on the HUD statement. That is just something that is required, but it's not basically mandated at closing that you have it.
So let's say I have a $200,000 reserve, and I have a $200,000 parking lot that I put together. You know, we have to do the parking lot. Well, let's say roof, so it's more of an emergency. So we had to do the roof, and we don't have additional $200,000 in reserves, but we do have the money in escrow. Can we pay the contractor with the money from escrow, or do we have to pay it? So you say a draw, usually on a draw, I have to pay it and then be reimbursed. Right. So do we have to have additional reserves beyond the escrow to spend?
You want to have additional reserves beyond that escrow to have. Now, in a situation of something that's an emergency, when that property condition report is done and that roof is deemed, okay, this roof needs to be repaired, those reserves for something like that, if it's an acquisition, those reserves are taken at closing anyway.
Yeah, I guess I was just saying, like, I was trying to think of a quick emergency.
But
if you don't have
you want to have that as additional you want to have that as an as additional reserve. They made that clear.
Okay, so you really don't utilize the escrow then, because you need to have your yeah. reserves for the property. And then if you're dipping, so what, when would you come in to the escrow? So what if we had a series of bad events and we don't have the income from the property, maybe it's lower, but we do need that money in the escrow for operations.
And an emergency operation. What I've been told is it's going to be handled on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
So that puts us in that gray area where I don't have a definitive answer for you. Unfortunately, but it said in the notes to me that and to everybody, actually, it just says that it's handled on a case by case basis. So I guess if we close right away and you're like, hey, we've got 200K in there, but we need 100 of it for an emergency 6 months down the road. Well, that will be handled on a case by case basis. So I am telling my investors, my clients, hey, try to have some extra. Because I don't know, because this has never happened before. This has never been required before. When we got these, the notice that all these changes were being put in place, the disclosures weren't even complete yet. So closings were actually postponed a few days while they got the disclosures together. So it's going to be one of those situations where they're trying to figure it out as they go, because it's so new and it's never happened before. So that's something they're going to handle on a case by case basis.
Okay, so you definitely want to have
something
going into anything like this, and that's absolutely. And that's good for buyers, because that's going to drive down the price that I'm willing to pay.
Right, and it's across the board, right? Because you're going to run into that with any buyer who's coming along and they're taking out debt and not paying cash for a property. They're going to have the exact same situation. So we'll need flexibility. And honestly, I mean, I don't see these reserves going away anytime soon, because it kind of gives the lender a sense of comfort that, okay, we know we have 12 months of reserves put up and we have a mandatory replacement reserve on the property.
So then what about sellers? So right now may not be the best time to sell, or maybe it is, but depending on their opinion, you know, can they like postpone that sale at all if they don't want to go to market yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen a lot of sellers pull their properties off the market because they want to wait. You know, there are some sellers who can't wait. Maybe they just want the cash now, or maybe they're, you know, it's tied to a 1031 and they have a deadline that they have to meet. Even though it's been extended, they still have a deadline nonetheless, and they need to hit that deadline. So when when we went into shelter in place shutdown mode, we saw a lot of sellers pull their property off the market.
Well, I guess what I was meaning is if they have a balloon due, so they may not have a choice. So maybe their balloon's due in the next 6 months, but they're like, man, this is really not the time I want to sell. I don't want to be putting my tenants through people walking through, you know, are the lenders saying, listen, we'll give you until this is over to extend your loan?
Absolutely. I've seen a lot of lenders be flexible. They're allowing forbearances if needed. They are being flexible with timelines. Absolutely. If you're in a situation like that, reach out to your asset manager, reach out to your mortgage lender, because most places I know here in Dallas, you can't even foreclose right now. So, you know, they have to work with you.
Well, that's good to know. And then what about refinancing? So if you're in a point in your business plan where you want to refinance your apartment or multifamily in some capacity, what hurdles are they having right now?
Really no hurdles. And this is actually a really good time to refinance because the rates are so low. So I would still encourage people to move forward with the refinance. Now, if you're looking for cash out, refinance, acquisition, it doesn't matter. They want us to do this interest reserve and the replacement reserve. So you can look at it from two different angles. You can look at it as, oh, well, I like to refinance, but I don't want to do the reserves because I want to maximize my cash out. That's one angle that, you know, you want to think about, you know, will it work with the reserves being held? And then, you know, if the property is cash flowing, you can get that money back, especially with Freddie. You get it back so much quicker than you do with Fannie. The other thing that I forgot to mention is that the loan to value across all product types have been lowered by 5%. So now we're unable to hit 80% on most products. We're hitting 75%. We're hitting 70%, maybe even 65%, depending on the market. So an investor may want to hold out just because if they wait, they'll be able to get 5% more and they may not have to do the escrows. So that's what they need to decide. I mean, 5% is, depending on the loan size, right? 5% could be a nice amount of money, you know, that you would be able to get if COVID was not an issue. But I've had investors ask me, well, hey, when do you think this will be lifted? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue if we're going to go back to the 80%. I don't have a clue when they're going to drop the reserves. But, you know, behind the scenes and talks with my lenders, we just don't think that reserve is going to go anywhere anytime soon. Now, as far as the LTV, that may change, you know, but we'll see, especially because we're hearing that, oh, we'll have another COVID issue in the fall when flu season starts back up. It makes lenders apprehensive. You know, it makes them concerned and scared. So I don't know if that interest reserve will go anywhere anytime soon. But that is one reason why you need to do, as an investor, you would need to decide, hey, should I wait this out or should I go ahead and refinance? It could mean 5% in interest reserves, but you're going to get a really good rate.
Yeah. So you brought up forbearance. So let's talk about that. As something I admittedly haven't looked much into, but there are some major pros and cons to that from what I've heard from other people. Why would you want to take that? What are the benefits and what are the drawbacks on those?
So my advice is to not do it. If you can hold out and your property is occupied and you're able to meet your debt service, you know, it really depends on how you underwrote your deal and how you structured your deal from the beginning. This is why it's really important to be conservative to protect your investors going in. A lot of investors underwrite their deals very aggressively, where if their property, you know, drops, the occupancy drops, the economic vacancy, you know, goes up, they can't survive. You know, they can't meet debt service. So if you're in that position and you just don't have a choice but to do it, you know, and you can't take cash from your own pocket to try to float it, then by all means, you have to do what you have to do. But the agencies are offering it, but from what I've been told, they're not making it easy. You need to prove without a shadow of a doubt that you need this loan, that your tenants have that you need this forbearance and that your tenants have been affected by COVID and your collections have been affected by COVID. So it's not something where you can say, oh yeah, I'll just take the forbearance anyway. No, you're going to have to document and provide documentation on why you need it. So one, it's not the easiest thing to get anyway, but if you can float it by any means possible, do that, hold out. And the reason I say that is because I feel like it's so new that it could just come back and bite you in the butt later, for lack of a better term. You know, I feel like if you can at any cost, avoid it. Especially if you intend on investing in the future, because if you ask for a forbearance, I feel like it could be put on your record. Now, that has not been told to me. That is my personal opinion, because when I voiced my concern, they said, oh no, you know, it's not like that, you know, so only time will tell. But I feel like if you ask for forbearance now and a year down the road, you want to get a loan again, I feel like there will be some kind of list that you'll be on to say, oh, well, you asked for forbearance. Well, that was during COVID. Oh, well, it's still a strike against you. Yeah. So we don't know if we can get you this loan. That's just my personal opinion. But for the forbearance, what they're doing is they're offering you 3 months to skip your mortgage payment. If you can prove that you need it and they grant the forbearance, then you don't have to pay a payment for 3 months. During that, I think it depends on the agency. I actually have it right here in front of me. Let me double check real quick because I don't want to give you the wrong information. Yeah, you have a 12-month period to pay it back. The 3 months that you go into the forbearance agreement with, you have 12 months to pay it back. But during that time, that 12 months until it's paid back in full, you are not allowed to evict anyone. So keep that in mind. You've got tenants in there that has nothing to do with COVID. They just don't like to pay, but you're unable to evict them until your 3 months are paid back in full.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. So basically now the 3 months are over, you're paying a higher payment and you can't evict anybody. So you owe more and you're earning less. I see no benefit to that whatsoever.
I see no benefit to it whatsoever. And, thankfully I haven't had any clients that needed it, but that is my advice. Just if you can not do it, just don't do it.
Yeah, that is brutal. Yeah. From what you've told me, that does not seem like a wise plan. I mean, even if you are pulling out of your pocket to pay that payment, you have to be able to take a tenant who's not paying to put somebody back in to pay. Yes. Or you're just going to dig yourself into a big hole. You're not going to get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. That's terrifying. So, okay, well, hopefully, if you're listening and you're thinking about forbearance, you'll at least listen to that and talk to your personal accountant or your mortgage person and discuss your options. But I don't think that's the right one for sure.
Yep, definitely not the right one.
So what else is different? Is that...
That's pretty much it. The lower LTV, the interest reserves, the replacement reserves, those are the three biggest things. And of course, the rates are better. So, I've seen Freddie drop their rates over a 2-week period. They dropped their rates 50 basis points. So they want to lend, right? And they're trying to... Initially, they were being super, super picky, asking for a ton of things that they didn't ask for before, but they're loosening up a little bit as things progress along. And as we can see where things are heading, we're hoping that, we get back to our new normal, whatever that means. But that's pretty much the biggest things is the interest reserve, the replacement reserves, the drop in the loan to value. They really want to see your experience at this point. A lot of things that we were able to get waivers for before, we're unable to do that now. So they're just a little bit more strict than what they were. So having that good partnership, like we talked about, is really going to be key right now, now more than ever than what it was before. And making sure that your contract has extensions, has enough time, force majeure clauses, no hard money, make sure you talk to a good SEC attorney to guide you along that process.
Yeah, I've heard a few stories of people who have gotten very stuck when they made hard money loans prior to the shutdown and they are, no financing contingencies, nothing. And it's just hard money. And hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's
yes, gone down the drain.
Yeah, I mean, you either close or you don't. But I mean, that's definitely something. I'm sure they've got some difficult stories to tell their investors. But
absolutely.
So, but yeah, it's I guess that's the game you play with hard money.
Yep, that's it.
So Brandy, tell everybody who didn't watch the first one how they can get a hold of you and. So you can help them out.
Yes, absolutely. So got my office line this time, guys. It's 469-929-9538. My cell is 469-626-7979. My website is RenoCM for capital management, RenoCM.com. And my email is Brandy@RenoCM.com.
Awesome. Well, I'll put all those in the show notes for this one and definitely reach out to Brandy. She absolutely knows her stuff. And if you're looking for financing, she will know all the current stuff of what's going on when you call, whether it's this event or regular times or another event, she will be right on top of it. So I definitely recommend reaching out to Brandy. And Brandy, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us.
All right, you take care.
All right, thank you.